KEZK-FM and HD1, St. Louis.
CBS Radio St. Louis presents The Metro Show, a weekly program devoted to charitable organizations in the St. Louis area.
This is The Metro Show, and I'm here with my friend Julie Pershke, who's on the phone with me. And her son Nicholas has overcome the genetic disease ALD. Now, Julie, thank you for being here today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And, you know, there's so many different facets to this story, and I want to get to the event that you've got planned out for November 18th at Creve Coeur Park. But I thought it would be best if we just kind of start from scratch and tell us a little bit about your family. Tell us about Nicholas and exactly what is ALD.
Okay. Yeah, my son is 12, going to be 13 soon, which is quite scary to be a teenager coming up in my house. And I have a daughter, Gabrielle, too, who is 9, and my husband's name is Dave. And we found out Nicholas had ALD, which is also known as adrenoleukodystrophy, when he was a newborn. I am a carrier. It is an X-linked genetic disease, so women, female carriers. My dad had the adulthood form AMN, and so I knew since I was 15 that I was a carrier. So we need to have him tested at birth. So we found out when he was about 2 weeks old, maybe, the results came back. And that was pretty devastating to find that out because the disease can be very aggressive and fatal in childhood form. So that's the history there. We were blessed in a way to know since he was a baby, because it's much more frightening when you find out after the boys have already shown symptoms. But we were able to at least follow him from birth on. It only manifests itself in boys.
Now, at that point, what was your plan of action? Because I know it sort of has become this thing that you've lived with ever since he was born, basically.
Right, yes. So we had been in contact with some of the leading doctors, or the leading doctor of ALD up in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins, a university or hospital, Dr. Raymond. And he had studied under Dr. Hugo Moser, who was portrayed in the movie Lorenzo's Oil. Some of your listeners might be familiar with that movie with Susan Sarandon from the, I think, late 80s, 90s. And so we had gotten him kind of pre-enrolled in the Lorenzo's Oil program through Johns Hopkins and Kennedy Krieger Institute in Baltimore. So at age 1.5 or 18 months, we made our first visit up there. He had his first MRI. They take baseline MRIs, and they would follow him every year. They would also have other neurological tests done. And he started on a very low-fat diet and taking Lorenzo's Oil twice a day. That is to try to keep the very long-chain fatty acids low in his body. It's not a cure, but we think that it did prevent or stave off symptoms for probably 10 years.
And to know Nicholas is to know this very active boy. And you would never in a million years imagine that this was something that he was dealing with.
Yeah.
And I think that's it's a tribute to you and Dave and your entire family that he has had such a normal childhood while having to undergo so many sort of abnormal type of tests and doctor's visits that no other kid really would have to deal with.
Exactly. You stated it very well. He struggled as he got older with, you know, no one knows I have this disease yet. I have to deal with it and live with it. And my diet is so different. He still has never tasted a French fry because it's so fatty. He just stayed away from all fatty foods. And
Isn't a bad thing, though.
No, it's not a bad thing. He's a very healthy eater.
Right, very healthy eater
from day one. So that's just what he knows. But he struggled with, you know, I'm dealing with this, and yeah, I have to make these visits every year, and I have to have these tests done, and other kids think I'm normal, which was a goal of Dave and mine, is to provide him a very normal childhood, and, you know, just so that he felt normal and was like any other boy. And thankfully, we were so grateful that he was for the first 10 years of his life. He was able to do everything that he wanted to do, and he showed no symptoms of the disease. And we attribute that to the diet, the oil, his doctors, and we're just, you know, very grateful that he was able to have that normal life for the first 10 years of his life.
I think it's important to remind folks that this is an extremely rare disease.
Well, it is. They say it occurs in 1 in 17,000 boys, but there are even more rare diseases out there than ALD. And now that they're trying to get newborns screened in other states. It's slowly picking up pace. They're going to find out, or they're finding more boys have it. It's just that we don't know until it's too late. So it is still considered a rare disease, but the numbers are kind of growing as they are screening more newborns.
So as Nicholas is getting older, you realize at some point it's a race to see if you can curtail this before, based on everything I'm reading, before it reaches the brain. That's not what you want to have happen,
yes,
correct?
Exactly. And sadly, the boys who don't survive this disease are ones that it's already manifested in the brain, and the parents don't realize it until a teacher tells them trouble in school, or they're not seeing the board, or they're acting out, their behavior is changing, or one of the boys we knew had auditory processing issues, and they thought he had an auditory processing disorder. And come to find out, after an MRI, his brain was filled with white matter from ALD. Thought it was brain cancer, but no, it was even something worse and couldn't be, you know, operated on. Sadly, it manifests itself very quickly, but too late, you know. And so it's so important to find out early on, and that's why we were so grateful that Nicholas was receiving yearly MRIs, and the first time the doctor saw a lesion forming in his brain due to ALD, you know, he watched it very closely, and that was when he was 10 and a half,
mm-hmm.
I guess is when they found that. And then he continued to have MRIs every few months to monitor that, hoping that it wouldn't creep further into his brain. But eventually, after maybe 6-7 months, the doctor said it's starting to progress and you need to stop it now. And again, we were very blessed and very grateful that we were being he was being followed, because a lot of times it does move a lot faster in most boys. It's very aggressive and it moves very quickly until it's too late. Where with him, since we knew what we were watching for and he was older, and possibly because he had been on Lorenzo's oil, it did not move as quickly or progress as quickly as it does in many boys.
In a sense, as you say, it was a gift that you
yes.
knew already.
Yes.
Whereas some parents, that's heartbreaking to imagine getting a phone call and
yes.
being told your child has this and you had no idea.
Yes.
That was the case.
Yes, devastating.
So walk us a little bit through that process then, because through the years as he's growing up, you're going to doctor's visits, you're monitoring closely. And then when he was 10 and a half, things got really serious, correct?
Yes, very scary. We had received a call that we didn't ever want to receive, that they had noticed something on his brain MRI. His MRIs had been normal for 10 years or 9 years since he started at age one. And the doctor called me, and I remember exactly where I was, sitting in the parking lot. I had to pull over and hear the results, and he said there is a small lesion. Told me exactly where it was in the brain, and it was one of the hardest days of my life since finding out the disease when he was a newborn. And I just said, well, where do we go from here? And there's only one treatment, and it's bone marrow transplant. And the doctor said, we don't want to rush into that just yet because it is so risky and not all boys survive it. We're going to just continue to monitor it and see if it becomes, he always would say, if it becomes angry and it starts growing and if it's inflamed. So we basically had a lot of waiting, very scary, nerve-wracking waiting for another couple months before we had another MRI, and another couple months after that before another MRI. And thankfully, it wasn't changing, but we always had this looming in the, you know, background of, are we going to have a transplant?
Sure. And all the while, your friends and family know this because we've been following along with you and supporting and being there with you as much as we can. But you're making trips back and forth and back and forth from St. Louis to Minneapolis.
Yes.
And I know you received a lot of support up there as well.
Yes. We made our first trip. We found out about his lesion in June. He had a couple more MRIs. And in January, actually the week before Christmas, we got a call from one of the nation's top leading doctors in bone marrow transplant. And he deals with ALD boys in Minneapolis. Our neurologist had moved to work with him, actually, at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Raymond had moved to work with Dr. Miller, and we received a call saying, you know, we really would like Nicholas and you all to come up so we can start discussing transplant, because we really, you know, are afraid that that's what we're going to have to do. And again, another very difficult call right before Christmas to know that we hadn't even told Nicholas that this. And so we had to tell him that we were going to Minneapolis because they had seen something on the MRI. And we also had to tell him we had to talk about transplant. And so his doctor very kindly even Skyped in with him ahead of time and had a long Skype call with him explaining what he was coming up for. And we had to tell him before the phone call so that he wasn't completely surprised. And the doctor was he's a pediatric BNT doctor, wonderful, explained everything in kid terms and very understanding, great bedside manner, couldn't ask for a better doctor. And then we went up there for several tests in January and also to have his him typed for a transplant in case, because they have to find a match, the closest match possible.
Sure. So at this point, as any parent would do, you drop everything and you're, like you said, your initial reaction is, okay, what's next? But in doing so, that throws your family, your entire life into this whirlwind, I guess is a fair way to put it, over the next year or two, right?
Yes, very much so. Yes, we had just been sitting and waiting and praying and had so many people praying for us, but it was a lot of excruciating waiting. And then when we had to take off in January and go up there, we were probably there for 4 or 5 days and leave our daughter at home with our grandparents and just a loads of prayer warriors behind us, knowing that we weren't, you know, we didn't know when we got there if they'd say, well, the MRI is showing that it's getting worse, we have to, you know, sign him up for transplant now. And thankfully at that time we didn't have to, but it was a very eye-opening experience, about 2 days of talks with doctors on what is involved with the transplant so that we would be prepared, talking with Nicholas about what's involved, having lumbar puncture and MRIs and other neurological tests. And it was very painful as far as emotionally and, you know, stressful.
Sure.
And just hearing all of the bad things that could happen with a transplant, with a bone marrow transplant, it's a very risky procedure. And then coming back home knowing, okay, they said we don't have to do it at this point, but we will type him for a match because it more than likely would have to happen in the next so many months. And we just had so much support back home, and we met with social workers in Minneapolis and talked about having to live at the Ramadal house if we had to move there, and coming back home and kind of waiting again.
So I walk you through the difficult part. But with regard to the bone marrow transplant, you did get some good news.
Yes, we returned. He had another MRI in April, kind of still study. But then we returned to Minneapolis that July. So we went from January with all of that really tough medical stuff, and we really didn't head back there until July. So, you know, many months are passing, and you're still dealing with all the emotions. And Nicholas had a tough time with, what do I tell my friends? I might have to leave at any point for a transplant. And he didn't know if he was going to be able to have any summer. He didn't know if he was going to be able to go to camp, miss out on things in fifth grade. And the doctors kept saying it's still stable. But then when we went in July back up to Minneapolis, they said it's time we need to do something because it's starting to creep into his other ventricles and his brain.
Right.
It was like devastation after devastation. But the good news was they had found a perfect match. His sister is adopted, so that was not an option. They usually do not take from a parent donors, and I am a carrier, so that wouldn't have worked. And you're only going to get half of what you need from a dad. So we had a perfect match through an umbilical cord blood donor.
Wow.
A baby's umbilical cord blood. So moms donate those when babies are born. It's a free option, and it's offered at most hospitals, and it's anonymous, so we will never know who the donor was. And just from this tiny bit of umbilical cord blood, Nicholas got a second chance in life.
Think about that for a minute. I mean, that's an incredible moment for any parent when you realize that it's the gift of life in a sense, and there's no way for you to know who it came from, but just that it came from a family that decided to check off a box on a form when their child was born. And that's, I guess, the way it's supposed to work under perfect circumstances, isn't it?
Yes. And it's so easy that umbilical cord blood just gets thrown out otherwise. And yes, it can save so many lives, and it can be used for so many diseases. It is just nothing short of a miracle, and it's just amazing to me to think that. And when they hook him up, because a bone marrow transplant is not a surgical procedure, it is all done through IV, and they hook a bag up with that, those stem cells, and for umbilical cord, it's not a lot. The bag is not even full, and so you're not getting the full that you would get from an adult donor.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it did the same job. It took a, you know, maybe a little bit longer to take hold in his body, and his blood, his type of blood, kind of took longer, pretty much 10 months before it totally changed over. But it still did the same thing that an adult donor would have done. It's amazing how little bit was in this bag, and he just sat there and it just went into his system, and it's just such a gift of life, like you said, and it's just a check on a box when a mom gives birth. So it's, and we are just going to be forever thankful.
And
forever
so thankful. I've seen Nicholas several times over the summer, and I have to tell you that you would never know that he's been through any of this. He's running around. He's maybe as athletic a 12-year-old as you've seen. It's a tribute to you and your husband and your family and that whole supporting cast that you've talked about, that this kid not only survived all of this, but has come out of it with such a level head and such a well-mannered, and, you know, he's been through the ringer here.
Yeah, to say the least, yes. Yes, and yeah, I mean, he had to go through intense chemo. These kids have to take a week or more of very high dose of chemo, a couple different, well, he was on several different medications, but a couple different types of chemo. They basically take a healthy kid, because a lot of, if they catch it early with ALD, the boys are pretty healthy. If they're catching it later, of course, not as much. But they aren't kids who have been through chemo for other diseases or other cancers, like sometimes with transplants. And so he's going in healthy, fully athletic, very strong kid. And then you take them down to nothing. They wipe mm-hmm. out their entire immune system. Zero blood, white blood cells are left, and they need to put in the whole new entire immune system with the new stem cells. And he was just so sick for a few weeks there, and that was the hardest yeah. part, is taking someone so healthy and making them so sick. But obviously, we made the right choice, and we were very, very thankful and blessed. And yes, it took him a long time to get back to where he is. It was probably not until he had his transplant last September. And it took basically till this past June, so maybe about 9-10 months before he was feeling himself. It took a long time to crawl and scratch and bite his way back, and he worked really hard to try to keep physically fit and to exercise and build his strength back up. And he just was hit with a lot of viruses, though, too, because your immune system is so mm-hmm. weak. But yeah, he's back, and the summer was great for him. He squeezed everything he possibly could back into life. And yeah, he is. He's back the athlete that he was before, just as strong, and he loves to run, and he just finished his first triathlon, and nothing short of a miracle. And it's a testament to the amazing doctors at the University of Minnesota and his neurologist from when he was an infant to follow him this whole way, and the newborn screening that we had, and the umbilical cord blood donor. There's so many, you know, reasons to be thankful for.
His prognosis now going forward is fine. Is this something we need to continue to monitor, though, correct?
Yes, he will go back up to Minneapolis every year to get his regular brain MRI to make sure it's not showing back up again, and some neurological tests.
Sure.
But they foresee it as him, you know, his prognosis being very good. The first boys who had this done are first turning 30 right now. So, you know, they first did this 20 years ago or so, and those boys are doing very well. Or now they're young men, obviously, and they're doing very well. They just don't know about longer prognosis than that, because there is
sure.
sadly an adulthood form of this disease called AMN. They don't have any results on those early transplants to know if the adulthood form could still be come into play.
Julie, tell me about Aiden's Law and how that relates to Nicholas's story.
Oh, it is so important. It is the law that actually Aiden is a little boy who died of ALD, adrenoleukodystrophy. I don't remember what year that was, but he died of it, and they didn't know he had it. And so it was just too late once they found out he had it, because it is a very, like I said, progressive, aggressive disease, and eventually takes over all of your neurological function and leads to death. And sadly, that's what happened to Aiden. But his parents started this foundation, and Aiden Jack Seeger Foundation, and now they have been pushing for the last few years for Aiden's law to be passed in all the states so that ALD will be put on the newborn screen that is done on all newborns. And one of Nicholas's, actually my dad's doctor's wife, Dr. Moser's wife, Ann Moser, she was one that developed the newborn screen to make it as simple as possible to screen these newborns. And it just isn't involved in the heel prick that they do on all newborns, and they test for many genetic diseases, and some of them are even more rare than ALD, but they're on the newborn screen, but ALD has not made it on that. In all states, I think five have passed it, and it is slowly taking hold in other states. Aiden's Law is trying to make it so it's done in all 50 states.
This is why it's so important to get the word out and to raise awareness. Yes. About the disease and all of these issues and the benefits of bone marrow transplants and registering for that. And you've got a big event happening, Creve Coeur Park, on November 18th. Tell us about the Run for ALD, Cure the Boys.
This was actually our son Nicholas's idea. He has asked for years why there was never a run or an event for ALD when he has, you know, a friend who has diabetes, and we go to his JDRF walk, and we know someone who has muscular dystrophy, and we go to the MDA walk, and, you know, you know the ones about the breast cancer and all kinds of different cancer events. But ALD, since it is rare, we really don't have one main nationwide organization. It's really up to the parents. There are several small organizations, but no events that, you know, are done by one national organization.
Sure.
So it's up to the parents to kind of do these things. And Nicholas has asked for years, and now that he's went through this, we thought, well, this is the time. You know, he deserves this. We need to do something to help other boys and get the word out. And Nicholas is a runner. He loves to run. He runs 5Ks. He just did a triathlon. So we thought it was very fitting. So he came up with the name Run for ALD, Cure the Boys. And we just are doing it from the ground up. We're having it at Creve Coeur Park on November 18th at 9 a.m., and we've invited all our friends and all of our community that we know, and we're also trying to get the word out through Facebook and obviously through you, and so that other people who might know someone affected by ALD or just want to help out in a cause that could really use some help, we'd love for them to come. We have hooked up with many other ALD families. There are actually some other families locally that we didn't even know about. Sadly, one who just lost their son this past July or August from St. Louis here. And so they're going to come, and so there will be some other ALD families there. And we just like anyone who likes to run and run along Creve Coeur Lake. That's where it's going to be. We'd love for them to come out and show support for this disease that really affects boys. And that if enough money is put into research and they can, you know, get Aiden's Law passed, that these boys can be saved.
Absolutely. And all the money raised from Run for ALD will benefit the University of Minnesota Research Foundation for ALD to support this cutting-edge research for early identification, treatment options, and a possible cure for the disease. And that's why it's so important to get the word out now, because the run is November 18th. And so we've got time. We don't have unlimited amount of time. How many people have registered? We need some more folks out there, though, correct?
Yes, yeah. We have about 90, which is a really good number for this point. They're still a month and a half out. I have a lot of people who tell me they're going to sign up, but, you know, being the organizers of the event,
we
want you to sign up now. We've got to order our T-shirts. We've got our T-shirt design that Nicholas and his sister helped with, and we've got to get that order in by the end of the month, and it's $25 if you register by November 1st. It's $35 after that. And with organizing an event for the first time like this, we really like to know ahead of time what we're in for, as far as how many waters, how many snacks, how many volunteers do we need. And since we've never done this before, we're really aiming for at least 200 people. I think we'll get there. Because we have a lot of people who say they're still going to come. We also have, you know, Nicholas's teammates who I think, you know, will come out and support him. He's on a soccer team and a volleyball team, and his school classmates are starting to sign up. But we'd like to have as many people out as possible to just even show support for families fighting this disease.
If people want to register, what's the best way for them to go about doing that?
It's through Fleet Feet. We have a website through Fleet Feet. So the easiest way you could even go on Fleet Feet's website and search under the races. We're listed as run for ALD on November 18th. We also have a specific website through them, which is fleetfeetstlouis.com/racing/run-4-ALD.
As we said, you know, there's not an unlimited amount of time. So the sooner we need to order T-shirts, you know, the Hewitts are going to be out there.
Yeah.
So
you're going to be helping us.
Well, absolutely. Here's a question I try to ask of everyone that we talk to. For parents maybe who are going down a similar path, maybe not with ALD, but with a child who's dealing with something that they're not sure really what the end result's going to be, what would be your best advice for those parents?
Well, first of all, my faith is very important to me, so prayer would be at the top of the list for me. And I think that carried us through so much, and hope. I mean, there's just, and I think prayer gives you hope, and the use of, you know, making use of your community and your family and your friends to help you in so many ways, but to have hope. There's always hope, and there's always good people out there who will help you have hope, whether by donating, you know, blood. I mean, Nicholas received blood so many times. We're so thankful for all the blood donors out there, or donating bone marrow, or donating their time, or helping you find the right doctor. We are so blessed to have such good doctors in our country, in our city, you know, in our nation, that are working tirelessly to find ways to help people fight diseases, and especially children. Even though the funds may not be there, I know that the doctors at University of Minnesota, Children's Masonic, I've spoken with people who work with them, and I know these doctors personally, but they're not going to brag on themselves. But those who work with them say how they will, you know, sadly miss family events of their own to stay late, to keep working, to keep trying to find something to help these boys. They will, you know, spend the evenings on the phone with the families, and or visit the kids in the hospital rooms, and you know, they're being told you need to go home to your family, but they know, and they've seen, you know, how devastating this disease can be to boys, and they want to make a difference, and they want to keep working harder to find that cure or that better treatment. And I know there's doctors out there like that for many diseases. So just for families to look for and search for the best care for your child, even if you have to go elsewhere to find it. I mean, we made huge sacrifices to do that, because there's hope. There's hope out there. There's people who will help you. And of course, your faith and your community will carry you.
We are going to get the information up on our website as well. And also, to become a bone marrow donor, bethematch.org would be the website to go to. You can order a swab kit at bethematch.org. And they really do. We've talked to those folks before. They walk you through that entire process.
Yes. It's a pretty simple process to get matched, to see if you're, you know, or to get on the registry. It's a cheek swab, I think, and you can send it in. You can do it at home. And that is a very simple process.
Well, I know this is not the easiest topic for you, and you do such a great job of making it understandable for those that don't know what this is. And there are so many of those kind of diseases, and raising awareness is always so important. Julie Pershke, mother of Nicholas, the driving forces behind the Run for ALD Cure the Boys, November 18th, 9 a.m. at Creve Coeur Park. We need to get you out there. Julie, thank you so much. Can't wait to see you on the 18th.
Thanks so much, Craig. I really appreciate it.
Arch Bark is coming on Saturday, October 14th.